Welcome to the blooming desert of western New South Wales, where this week's encounter explores how recent rainfall has not only resulted in flowing rivers and a greening of the red earth, but a spiritual resurgence too.
The desert has always been as if you want to find God, you need this, you need that space. In a desert, in this empty space, you find that you are closer to the source of love and life and knowledge, and you feel how small that you are. And it's actually the illuminations, the awakening of the heart is, it's much quicker in this environment. So this is a place, it's become like Omar Khayyam, you know, the desert, and perhaps a bottle of nice cold rose water or Zamzam water perhaps, and nice holy book to read, would be of great and a beautiful experience.
Murshid F.A. Ali El-Sanusi, originally from Libya, has lived in Australia for 20 years and has recently decided to move his Sufi community from Hobart to Broken Hill. I'm Kerry Stewart, and today we're going to spend some time in the city of Broken Hill to explore the rich religious and cultural history of this mining town and find out what changes there have been over the last century. The people I met spoke of decline and renewal, drought and abundance, mining the spirit as well as the earth. So let's meet some of them. Christine Adams is an historian and author of Sharing the Load, The Broken Hill Migrant Story. She's also the manager of the Sulphide Street Railway and Historical Museum, where I asked her what period of time her book covers.
We started with around the 1883, 1884, and that was specifically to include what we class as the Afghan Cameleers, from 1883 to about 2000, so that we took in our recent community members from the Philippines. And in between, of course, you have nationalities that sort of came out after the war because they were homeless, and basically they all said the same thing, that they came to make a better life for their children, and they've certainly done that.
And so the Afghan Cameleers, they didn't necessarily come from Afghanistan, though, did they? It's a broad area where they came.
Pakistan, India, Afghanistan, and a lot of these places, the boundaries have all changed anyway over the since then. Bobby Shamrose, his father is Shamrose Khan, and his maternal grandfather was Fasala Ab. I forget the full name now, but we always knew him as Fasala Ab. Now, he was probably the second to last practicing Muslim in Broken Hill. I think he died in the 50s, 1953, I think, and was buried under Muslim law and service. And that was organised by his father-in-law, Fasala Ab. And that then Fasala Ab lived a few more years, and when he died, basically he was the last regularly practicing Muslim in the city. And he was in charge of the mosque at that time. And the mosque sort of became neglected and was eventually, I think the Historical Society's been looking after it for many years.
We're at the Broken Hill Mosque at the moment. My name is Bob Shamrose. My proper name is Amanullah Shamrose, which I was named at birth, but I go under the name as Bob. My daddy was one of the Afghan Cameleers, along with my grandfather, and they all used to come down to the mosque before they went out with their loads out into the outback. And they probably said prayers before they went on their trips, because I think they used to say their prayers quietly to themselves as they travelled. Otherwise, it would have interrupted their trip, because they had to get to certain places at certain times of the day.
And when did your father and grandfather come here to Broken Hill?
Well, I believe, I'm only estimating, roughly around in between 1894 and 1900. That's around about the time, because that's around about the age of this mosque. I think it'd be more like 1887 that they built this.
And it's the oldest mosque in New South Wales, is that right?
As far as I know, yes. That's still here.
And it still functions as a mosque?
Yeah, people from away come here, from Adelaide, Sydney and Melbourne in groups, and they always come down to the mosque and pray. Then here nearly all day. I don't know, it's sort of a culture with them. They just like to be around the mosque. But around here at the moment, I think there might be a doctor or two that come over on a Friday.
From the local hospital?
Probably, yeah.
Bob Shamrose isn't a practicing Muslim, but there's a new group in town that is. Let's find out about the Sufis, who follow the mystical dimension of Islam, and why their teacher, Murshid Ali El-Sanusi, decided to move the community from Hobart to Broken Hill.
So if you say, who is the Sufi? A Sufi, he is a good Muslim who desires to meet God here and now. We, in our tradition, we follow the Burhaniya, Dasuqiya, Shadiliya order. Our Sheikh, the great Saint Ibrahim Dasuqi, he's from Egypt. His teaching is not just, you know, hairy fairy things. So he wants people to be really grounded. He wants people to be part of the society, to work with their communities, and not to isolate themselves from everyday practices. So whatever you do, it is actually just spiritual work. If you are a teacher, or you are a painter, or taxi drivers. And this is the way actually the Sufis see things, and they work with things, to spiritualize all of our activities. I feel comfortable, for example, on Broken Hill. And I was very comfortable in my beautiful island in Tasmania. I lived for a while in West Australia, and I have many wonderful friends and students. So the ideas of why, this is actually most of the time, it is you entering the spiritual domain. So you can't say, because I decided to go. No, I cannot say that. I think it is. There is a more to it. The purpose, you have to be spiritual. So if it's not spiritual, then it is a waste of time.
Do you think the ancestors, the Muslim ancestors that have lived and worked here, the Afghan Kamilis, might have in some way influenced that decision?
So you're absolutely right in this, because our ancestors in Australia, beside their contribution of opening the outback of Australia, they were spiritual Muslim and also Sufis. So they are belong. Most of them belong to the Qadiriyya order, and Broken Hill and the mosque of Broken Hill seem to have a special place in my heart. I feel very strongly connected to them, and their spiritual emanation still is felt in this particular part of Australia. So we feel that like we're not building from nothing. We already have a spiritual connection with this particular place in Australia. And that makes us feel comfortable, makes us feel more at home, if you could say.
Just before us here, what's this little channel in front of the mosque?
Yeah, this little channel in front of the mosque here is where the Afghans used to come before they prayed to wash their feet and hands and before they went into the mosque.
And this little channel where people did their ablutions, you have a story about that, don't you?
Yes,
personal story. Can you tell me?
Very sad story about that. That was when my poor old granddad died in 1960. I was 20 year old, and my uncle, Ted Cairn, his name was, got me and one of my other auntie's husbands to come with him. I didn't know what was going on. He said, come down to the mosque. Now, I went down to the mosque, and Grandad was lying there on the old door over the concrete here. And he said, now, you boys are going to have to give him a wash. He said, I'll instruct you what to do. And I'd never ever seen anyone deceased before, you know, so I did me best. Just had these wet cloths and we just wiped him over, and Uncle Ted done the rest. Just wrapped him up a bit, then we put him back in the coffin and took him back up to the house. And then the next day we went to the cemetery and buried him. And we do our own burials. The grave was dug about 4 foot wide, and then they had these big thick boards all cut. And Uncle Ted, he used to jump down into the grave and he'd take the lid off the coffin and turn Grandad's head a different way and then put the lid back on, but always kept the screws, and then put the boards over the top of the coffin, and then all the boys would get together with the shovels and just fill it in and put a stick at each end of it. And we still do the same thing today. Although we're not practicing Muslim, we still do our burials and everything the same culture as what we did back then. I've done 4 up to date, but only thing I haven't done, I haven't opened the coffin up and turned the heads, but taken the screws out and I put the boards down and we've all filled it in the same way.
Bob Shamrose is the caretaker of the Afghan mosque. The Sufi community and their teacher F.A. Ali El-Sanusi are slowly renovating a beautiful old building on the corner of Argent and Bromite Streets, which will become the new Sufi centre, a bookshop, and sometime in the future, a bakery. When I visited the centre, some community members gathered on mats and cushions to tell me about their experiences so far of living in Broken Hill. Dawood Abujanaid and his family were some of the first to settle here permanently. So how did he respond to Murshid Ali's decision about a year ago to move the community?
It was a bit of a shock, and I went home and told my family. But it was an exciting shock. And then the next day I woke up and thought, oh, got to move a whole house and 4 kids. And at that moment we had 4 kids. Our newest child is 1 month old, so she's the first of our community to be born here in Broken Hill. She's a local. But it was a shock, but our trust in our teacher, in our sheikh, we trusted him to do the right thing by us, so we knew that if he said, let's go, we were going. Part of our faith is to surrender ourselves to the will of God and to go with the flow, so to speak. So we needed to do that as part of our growth.
And the faces I'm looking at here, there's about 6 people, 4 men and 2 women. You've all got faces like mine, very Anglo-looking. So how did people come to Sufism? Would you like to explain first?
Yes, well, I must be the oldest one around here. My name is Nafisa. I was born and brought up in South Africa, raised as a Christian, came to Australia about in 83. But there was always a longing and a searching for God, although I went to the Christian church. And thanks to Allah, I was led in about 2001-2. My searching, Allah led me to Sufism through books, and specifically in this case, Rumi, the poet. And then I encountered Murshid Ali's voice, and that was it. And I moved from Perth to Tasmania to be with him, and inshallah, we'll always be following.
And some other stories here. How about yours?
I'm Abu Bakr Sirajuddin. I came through to Sufism through philosophy. I read as widely as I possibly could in sort of my late teens, early 20s, and I found that some people made sense and other people's didn't. So I thought I'd try a bit wider than philosophy. I read a lot of the world's religions as widely as I possibly could, and I found that some of these things made sense to me and others didn't. So I thought that I'd pursue the mystical traditions of all of these different paths. And one thing that really struck me with the Sufi tradition is that irrespective of when the person lived or what geographical location they lived, they all agree with each other. And this is not something that I found in any other tradition. And it was inevitable that upon realising this degree of certainty that they all shared, that I would pursue this as well.
Now you're here in Broken Hill. When did you come here?
I arrived in Broken Hill about 6 months ago.
And what's it been like?
It's been a wonderful change. It's not as cold. I've not sort of, other than the people you see here, I don't really know anyone else in Broken Hill. And so meeting a lot of new faces and new people, and then they've all got that sort of quintessential Aussie outback spirit of come over here, what are you all about, and get to know you.
My name's Mohammed Ilyas. I arrived here in December and I've just loved the whole time I've been here.
What is it about Broken Hill that you love?
For me, I don't see the desert. I see a lot of life. And inwardly, I feel more alive than I was back in Hobart. Basically, I just see life, and I've met some good people. I've found a job that I really enjoy, and I feel I'm making some benefit for some people. I've got a house, or I'm waiting on a house. Everything you need's here, if you're patient enough. It's all here. And I've found it a very wonderful place.
Over the last century, a story of growth, decline and renewal has played out in many of the religious communities. A once thriving Jewish community helped establish Broken Hill as a prosperous city in the outback. Unlike the mosque, the beautiful stone synagogue built in 1910 is no longer a place of worship, but it still draws people. The local historical society has renovated the building, and last year there were over 600 visitors. The coordinator of the synagogue is Margaret Price.
It started being built in 1898. The thought was the Jewish community needed a synagogue. They started then, with the help of the rest of the Broken Hill community, to raise funds. They held what we would have called a Lamington drive. The Protestants in town helped raise those funds till they had enough money to commence building. The people here in Broken Hill, the Jewish community, primarily were the businessmen. Anything that people wanted for mining, these Jewish people would have sold.
And where did they come from originally?
Primarily, I would say they came from Russia, Germany, and fled through England and down through South Africa, and then eventually to Australia, ended up in Broken Hill. The Jewish people that come back for the 100th celebration in November 2010 were amazed that their forebears travelled over such roads to get to a place called Broken Hill in the middle of a desert. But they escaped as far as they could away from trouble in Europe and Russia. The Afghans would have been part of the Jewish settlement here because they would have been able to carry the goods on their camels that they required to come to Broken Hill, and they had a good relationship in the early days of Broken Hill.
When you look at Broken Hill's history, it was a mining town that was never really expected to last. My mind boggles when I think, even my own people, they came from Ireland. When they arrived in 1887, they lived in tents, there's no permanent water. Those sort of things, the distance, getting goods and things into Broken Hill. Our ancestors and the early pioneers, they had to fight for everything here. And I think that common cause and the fact that migration in Broken Hill never ever reached a huge number of any particular nationality, where any nationality could actually become dominant. They all came together and worked for the common good of this city. Better working conditions, permanent water supplies. Even when I was born in the mid-40s, there wasn't a permanent water supply then. So when you have those things where you do work together, I think that overcomes any animosity. Not all of it, and you'd be a very foolish person to say that there was not harassment in this city, because of course there was, just like anywhere else.
Historian Christine Adams. So why isn't the synagogue functioning as a place of worship today? Margaret Price, who isn't Jewish, is the coordinator of the synagogue.
I think the community diminished through the lack of education for their children. There was no Jewish school or Hebrew school set up, and they would have sent their children away, and like other good children in the world, they find their love in a capital city and they don't come back. to a country town. Broken Hill people are amazed when you start passing by names and saying they were a Jew. Well, they don't sound like a Jew, so therefore they weren't considered a Jew, but their names have been anglicised on their way from Adelaide or Perth or Melbourne to here. And I don't think many people took notice that there was a synagogue, because it stopped really in 1945. The last rabbi left here, so there would only be a few men. There had to be 10 to hold a minyan, to open a service in here. And gradually those people aged, pulled out of businesses, put managers in and left town. My whole aim was to put the people back in the synagogue, and I never ever believed that I'd put human people. I thought I'd put photographic people back in the synagogue. And the 30th of November last year, we managed to hold a 100th celebration within these walls, and 260 people came back for that celebration.
Those people who came back, the family members, they would have been the children or the grandchildren of the original people who lived here. What did they say? What was their feeling of being in this place?
They had a sense of love for the synagogue. They could feel their ancestors here. They sat and they contemplated. They asked a lot of questions, and then they would express themselves with tear of joy to know that this is still here, where their grandfather or mother or father had been before them. Some had actually been here as children and barely remembered it, but walked in, and once they did, the joy of being in here just overwhelmed them. I think they feel the Historical Society has done a wonderful job in containing this building and not letting it go. It could have been knocked down and the foundation stone removed, as was told to the remaining two Jewish men in the early 80s when they were struggling to survive.
Are there any Jewish people living in Broken Hill anymore from those original families?
From the original families, no.
On Radio National, you're listening to An Encounter about the changing nature of religious expression in outback New South Wales. A traditional definition of a city in England was that it had a cathedral. Well, Broken Hill is a city in those terms, with the Sacred Heart Cathedral being built in 1905. But the Catholic community, like many church communities in Australia, is experiencing declining numbers. And as a result, the bishop no longer resides in Broken Hill, and the office has moved to Forbes. So what are the particular challenges for Christians in this remote region?
I'm Father Sunny Kannamkulam, and now we are sitting in Second Heart Cathedral, Broken Hill. That's a cathedral church of Wilcannia Forbes Diocese. I came from India, south part of India, that's called Kerala. I came to Australia 2006, and I was appointed as a priest in St. Ignatius Church, Bourke. It's really an old, beautiful town, small town. So it was a very nice experience there, yes. It was really a good experience. That's my first experience in Australia. And 2008, I came in Broken Hill. Now at the moment, it's a shortage of priests in this diocese also. So Bishop called us or invited us from there, and we came here.
How many priests came from India?
In Wilcannia Forbes Diocese, there are four priests from India.
And how does the spiritual life, the Catholic spiritual life in India, how is it different to Australia or the outback of New South Wales?
Well, a lot of difference. Because in India or in Kerala especially, it's a traditionally very religious place. Either Hindus or Muslims or Christians. Every weekend, we can see at least 90-98% of people will be in churches. We can see a lot of people in the temple for their prayer day. And Muslims, then a Friday, there will be 90-90% of people will go mosques for prayer. So we can see a very traditional way of faith, practicing their faith in Kerala. But in Australia, as you know, not many in the church. Not many are practicing their faith. Maybe they have faith in their heart, but they are not practicing their faith. That is one of the main challenges. coming to the church for Mass, if the empty seats are there, no, it is not good to see. If you see more people, that's an encouragement for us also. The church is encouraging people to come together and praising God, thanking God. That will give them more grace and more blessings and also more protection and strength.
Now, this is a cathedral. It's a very beautiful cathedral. But the bishop's offices aren't here anymore, are they? So is this still considered a cathedral?
Yes, it is still considered as a cathedral, and bishop's office is now in Forbes. And he will be here for Easter, Holy Week, and Christmas time, and confirmation time, sometimes Holy Communion. Actually, now it's a discussion going on whether it want to split this diocese or keep it as a diocese. Now, because of the vast area and less population and less priests, but the people are asking for keeping us as a diocese. So if the church authorities considering keep us a diocese, they will keep us it is and they will give a bishop. At the moment, we don't have a bishop. We have only administrator.
So in the future, this may not exist as a diocese?
No, we can't say right now that way. Of course, we can all pray and also we want to keep us a diocese. That will encourage the people of this area to keep their faith strong.
The Lord be with you. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Go in peace to love and serve the Lord. Have a nice day.
Neville Naden's my name. I am an ordained Anglican minister from Sydney. Been now working in Broken Hill for the last nearly five years. I was asked to come to Broken Hill by both the Uniting Church and Bush Church Aid Society to help establish a work amongst our Indigenous people in Broken Hill. Prior to us coming here, we were doing the same at Mount Druitt. So over the last 4 years, we've been working away at trying to establish a congregation in this community of Indigenous people. One of the things that our people struggle with is to be accepted in the broader community. And when our people see a sign, be it Mount Druitt Indigenous Church or Far West Indigenous Church, they know it's a church that they can go to, that has Indigenous leadership, where they can be accepted. And we would hope that all churches are accepting of our people, but we know from experience past that that's not always the case. One of the difficulties that we do have, the Uniting Church is an elderly congregation and very lovely people. But, you know, at the end of the day, people do get set in their ways. And I know that I'm set in my ways at times. And quite often it's difficult to change the way in which you think and the way in which you act. And sometimes situations and circumstances will arise where the way in which we act and think can often offend other people. And so we've had some situations where that's happened. But the Uniting Church minister and I meet quite regularly. The ministers fraternal in town function really well, and they meet twice a month. All the ministers are open to, in Broken Hill, to having Aboriginal people come along, and some Aboriginal people attend some of the churches. And we're not about pulling people out of those churches, we're about encouraging them to stay where they are and to grow within the context of the local church, if that's where they feel at home. But we attend a Baptist church Sunday morning. So my primary employer is the Uniting Church with the support of BCA and the Anglican Church, but we attend a Baptist church. The minister at the Baptist church is an Aboriginal guy, and we want to support him in terms of what he wants to do, and he's quite open to us doing that.
Even though you're an Anglican minister?
Yeah, even though I'm an Anglican minister. Theologically, we might be a little bit different, but we serve the same God and are saved by the same grace that saves all mankind.
I'm wondering about the Indigenous community. Are they involved in this church?
There are not many Indigenous people coming in this church for service, but I blessed their weddings here, and few baptisms, and few people came for their confirmation and First Holy Communion, but not a regular basis.
Do they not feel comfortable coming into the church here and being part of the Catholic community?
I can't say a definite answer for that one, but I think they have another service in Broken Hill. But when I was in Burke, I can see a lot of people coming for the Catholic Church for service, usually for their funeral services, always in Catholic Church. And every weekend they are coming for Mass, and their very active participation was there. But I don't know much about the Broken Hill history and the way of life. At the moment, they have some other alternative service. Some of the ministers are there from their own community. But we have a Christian community a leaders group here. It's called a Christian fellowship meeting. So all the ministers coming together and discussing what's going on in each churches. And we are planning for the common programs. It's a good relationship, we can say.
And in the services, are there any concessions to Aboriginal spirituality?
Oh, too right. I think at the end of the day, Aboriginal spirituality can be understood in the light of Scripture. When we look at the Bible as a whole, you know, you look at the first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis, God dealing with humanity on a universal basis. It's not until we get to Genesis chapter 12 where Abraham comes on the scene and God chooses to work through the Hebrew nation. And that raises all sorts of questions, because we ask the question as to whether or not did God continue to reveal himself to people outside the Hebrew nation from that time on. And we know that he did, because you go to Exodus chapter 2 when you got Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, who was a priest of Midian, priest of the Most High God. And so God was still revealing himself to other groups apart from the Hebrew nation. And so whilst God was working through the Hebrew nation to bring about the Messiah, to bring about salvation, that's well and good, but it doesn't make null and void the culture that he's allowed our people to develop. Our people have never been atheist in any way, shape or form. They believed in a creator God, and we want to tell our people who he is, because he has a name, and that's Jesus.
Every land, the land that people perform spiritual practices on it, it's become alive and conscious, and it actually emanates with certain light. So every action gets a certain degree of illumination, light. I think it is a miracle that the Afghan mosque in Broken Hill is still alive and is still performing the duty which the Sufi Muslim Afghans have established here. The fragrance of their spiritual presence, it is there. You could feel their presence. These people, they have not disappeared. We are indebted to them. We are really, what we say, we are making the linkage with them, the spiritual linkage.
So shall we go into the mosque? Yeah, is that okay? We need to take off our shoes first. Yep. Just a sec. Is there anything I have to do specially to come in?
No.
Maybe firstly I need to describe the outside. The outside is corrugated iron.
Corrugated iron, yeah. All corrugated iron on the outside. And on the inside it's all got pressed metal for the walls and that. They've got a cement floor down here now, which used to be all half dirt. And the other room there still got the original floorboards and that on it. And it's been made heritage listed last year.
We're just in sort of the ante room, a little room outside of the prayer room. And there are carpets on the floor I can see in the prayer room. They're not originals though, would they be?
These carpets on the floor would be from people that have came here and prayed. Everyone that comes here brings something, like that little clock up there. Five times a day it comes out and the bloke starts singing the prayer song, they come in the prayer.
How big was the Muslim community here in Broken Hill?
Well, I can only go as far as, say, 1945, when I was only little, but I can still remember they used to all come here and congregate, because all of us kids used to come down here and we'd have a feed with them, you know, they'd be cooking curries, and they didn't teach us any of their language. Dad never ever taught us any of their language, and Granddad never ever taught any of these kids language and the prayers, go down and pray, you know, because I think they believed they came out here, they had their children and that, and they wanted to bring them up the Australian way. That's the way I looked at it.
So you still have some ritual associated with burial, but do you do any other rituals, like weddings or children being born?
No. I got married at a manse at the south of Broken Hill, and went home, about half a dozen people, had a bit of a tea, a bit of a drink, got up at 6 o'clock the next morning, jumped in my old Ford twin spinner, headed out the road out, back out to the shearing shed where I was working. And that was my honeymoon. But I made sure all my kids had good weddings and that.
So where did they get married?
Here in Birkenhall.
Yeah, but what religion?
Oh, they got married, one Catholic, the other one at Church of England, and the other one just out of Methodist, I think. They're not religious or anything.
And you're the caretaker of the mosque.
Yeah.
Do you think of yourself as a religious man, Bobby?
Oh, no, not really. It's calling everyone to prayer. And they all come from within, all around. My uncle used to tell me there used to be a chap here. He used to get out and he'd go like that and
put his hands around
his
mouth.
So they could hear him. And they reckon they used to be able to hear him all the way around the camel camp area, and they'd all come to prayer.
Hayya ala salah. Hayya ala salah.
These days, Islamic prayers can be heard on a Friday evening, wafting through the papered-over windows of a building in the main street of town. So let's go inside to find out about the members of the Sufi community who've moved from Hobart and how they've been received by the locals.
La ilaha illallah.
Every one of us is from a Western background that is in the community here at the moment, so we've all reverted back to our original state, Islam.
It has surprised some of the visitors that we've had in Hobart when they sort of, I mean, we've had Sudanese visitors, we've had sort of Pakistani visitors, when they come up the stairs and they see the room full of sort of Anglo faces, that it's quite confronting for them sometimes because they're not used to seeing so many, I guess, white Muslims.
Back in January, I was over in Sydney and then travelling back, and because of the flooding, got stuck in Cobar. The next night, got back down to Dubbo, and there was a kebab shop there, so I popped in and given the Muslim greeting, Assalamu alaikum. And the man there, he was so surprised, and he's like, where are you from? Tasmania. Yeah, but where are you from? Tasmania. It's a great miracle that he's a young Western man who's a Muslim. And I'm going, well, what are you doing here in Dubbo? You know, he was from Afghanistan, and there was an Egyptian man sitting there as well, so both very surprised.
Yeah. I'm originally from New South Wales, so it's sort of like coming home again. Even though Broken Hill, they follow the AFL, it's New South Wales, we're a rugby state, but that's all right.
And you've got a Storm shirt on at the moment, actually.
I know. Part and parcel of being part of the Outback is getting involved in what's going on at work and supporting the local charities. So we had footy day on today, so everyone wore their footy colours and donated for kids with cancer.
And how have the Broken Hill community reacted to you as a group? A lot of people I spoke to didn't know you existed, I must say.
As you mentioned before, you looked around and a lot of the faces looked like your face. So we're not hiding, but I suppose we look like the normal people of the town as well, seeing as we're Australian background. But if anybody asks, we would say, God willing, we are Muslims. But the people that know that me and my family are Muslim, like our landlady, people at my work and things like that, are very, they really don't mind. I think they like knowing a Muslim, because most people, they don't believe what they see on the TV. And then when they meet a Muslim, they're often curious, and they start to realise that, hey, it's just a human being like me. So it's a wonderful thing to share.
And there's a long history in this town anyway of people relating and intermarrying.
I don't think people are scared of Muslims in this town at all. You know, they're quite used to Muslims, we could say.
Really, the world we're living in a global village in the real sense. And Muslims and non-Muslims, they have to get used to the idea that they are belong to one earth, belong to one creator, regardless who is that. You know, if we hear a knock on the door and we are sitting in here, we all agree there is someone knocking out there. But who is he? Let's leave it alone. So let's agree, there is a God, yes. Let's agree on this, and we make bridges. We need to make small bridges between us. So Islam, it's a universal teaching and does not exclude anyone. Sufis, they have a more open mind and perhaps than ordinary Muslim.
Murshid Ali El-Sanusi. The effect of the rain that fell in western New South Wales and Queensland late last year can now be seen in the landscape surrounding Broken Hill. The Darling River is flowing, the Menindi Lakes are full, and the flora and fauna are abundant. So is this resurgence of nature mirrored in the spiritual life of communities living in the area? Margaret Price, the coordinator of the synagogue, knows of two Jewish converts living in Broken Hill today, and she told me one of their stories.
It's an amazing story in as much as this young lady studied in Whitecliffs with candle power and listening to cassette decks when she had power and learnt the religion and the language. She can speak Hebrew and read Hebrew. She had been coming here on her trips into Broken Hill and couldn't find the building open until one night she came by and the lights were in and on, and then we said, do join us. She'd been trying to look in for over 10 years, but I do believe she's in Melbourne at the moment. We haven't seen her for a little while. She's finishing a conversion to Judaism that she studied for 14 years. She was here for the 100th celebration and took part in the celebrations with the Jewish community to come up, and I think that was something that was gifted to her, and she had a lovely weekend.
If you look to the histories of humanity in general, the Holy Prophet, he said that mighty Allah, he has sent 124,000 prophet and messenger to humanity. And you find the community is very, they're practicing their spiritual teaching and religious teachings, and then suddenly everybody leave town, and then you get the empty buildings. And that's also one of the attractions to this town for myself. It is ready to bloom spiritually. I have seen the synagogue and I have seen some of the other religious places. Even in the mosque, as I said, the life force is there, but there is no one to collect it. It is sitting there and waiting for someone to say, I am here, come, let me be part of you. And that is what we want to do. We want to be part of this wonderful gift that Almighty God have put it in the center of Australia.
Water and green that always give a life, that will give a happiness in our mind, heart and body. Accept means everything try it's a kind of dryness, no? It will affect in our mind and thinking and life. So I can see right now, last year we got good rain, so we can see a good life. You can see birds, flowers, greenery, then that reflect the life of people also, that you can see or read from their face. People are more happy, and I can say more people come to the church also.
Catholic priest of the Sacred Heart Cathedral, Reverend Sunny Kanamkulam. Although there's been a decline in mining here over the last century, the industry has held solid. And recently there's been a bit of a boom, with new mines opening in the area. Murshid Ali El-Sanusi.
BHP established in Broken Hill, and they are really carrying the economies of Australia. We thought perhaps they are digging downward, we may dig upward. So we balance things up. We hope and we supplicate and pray to our beloved Allah to make our contributions, the spiritual contributions, that to lift and to remove the barriers between people in Australia and to become united and their hearts touched to one another. So the Sufi center of Broken Hill, perhaps like BHBs, become the source of the spiritual economics of Australia. I'm quite sure when the center established would be more than that. If you come 1 year, inshallah, from now, you might find a lot of things going on, studies, research, and people who come from so many parts of Australia. Perhaps when the word goes out, we may increase the populations of Broken Hill quite a bit.
That brings us to the end of this encounter. My thanks to all the spiritual miners of Broken Hill. You can find details of this program, including photos of the green landscape, on our website at abc.net.au/rn/encounter. There's also a place there to make comments, which I look forward to reading. Technical production today was by Stephen Tilley. I'm Kerry Stewart, and it's been good to have your company on this journey into the outback.